Hello and welcome everyone to our podcast on human rights in Europe. I'm Mira and I'm very pleased to be the moderator for our podcast series on abortion rights in Europe. I'm very pleased to kick off the first episode with the member of the European Parliament, Irène Tolleré. You are a member of the European Parliament since 2019 and you originally come from the south of France on the Mediterranean sea coast near Montpellier.
So I'm very happy to have you here today. You're a member of a Renew Europe, which is, for those who are not familiar with European parties, is a very pro-European party which fights for freedom and civil rights. You're equally member of the Regional Development Committee and for delegations for relations with Japan. But the most important thing is your position in FEM, which is a committee on women's rights and gender equality. So to kick off the podcast, I would like to ask you, what is your vision of Europe as a member of the European Parliament?
Hello everybody, and I will give an aspirational answer. I think that Europe is a dream come true, and that it needs, especially in these days and ages, a lot of hard work inside the European Parliament to make sure that the dream come true of the founders still delivers on an everyday basis on human rights.
Okay, great. So human rights, specifically women's rights, is the topic today. I would just like to elaborate on your recent parliamentary activity regarding women's rights and especially reproductive rights. So in June 2021, you contributed to the debate on reproductive and sexual health and rights in the Union, asking your peer parliament members to vote on the PEDRAG Fred Matrix report, aiming at making abortion freely accessible for more than 15 million women, which is still don't have access to free abortion. And also, more recently, in October 2021, you asked your colleagues to vote on a resolution during the plenary debate in Strasbourg, which sets out the right to abortion as a fundamental right for the autonomy and the self-determination of women. And this came in the context of Texas and the Senate Bill 8, which entered into force in September, which imposes a near total ban on abortion for women living in Texas. So at the moment, the situation around the world is very dynamic, and there's a lot of movement in reproductive rights, and sadly, this is not always into the direction of freeing reproductive rights for women. This podcast is taking place in the context of Texas, as I already elaborated on, but also in the context of the one-year anniversary of the Polish Constitutional Court actually announcing that the legislation on free access to abortion is incompatible with the Polish Constitution. So to kick off this meeting, I would like to ask you if you could tell our listeners something about what is the situation like on abortion rights in the European Union, and which countries allow abortion and which countries restrict it the most. Are there differences?
I think, first of all, it's important to realize that today there is no European law on abortion because it's not possible as it is considered to be a member state competence. But I'm fighting with one of my colleagues to sweep abortion from being a matter of security managed by the member state to put it into health. And health, we are working on the European health policy, so that would be partially a European competence. So at the moment, most countries allow abortion, but we have still some countries that do not allow, but more dangerously, we have countries that are getting out of abortion, like Poland, mm-hmm. but other countries also. In reality, if we look at the law, we have more countries that have recently legalized abortion, but still the drawback of the illiberal democracies that really target abortion cannot be ignored. And so it's very important that we are on the forefront in Poland, in Texas, everywhere where it happens, with a legal tool that forbids abortion, but we also need to tackle the soft tools that prevent women from having access to abortion, like peer pressure on the doctors that make it very difficult for European women to have a real access to abortion in a growing number of countries.
Mm-hmm. Great. So now you spoke about a legal tool which will be on the European level, which will ensure that every European woman has access to abortion. In what sense? Because the European Union is also consenting to the Charter of Fundamental Rights, and in this sense, the human rights as well. So in which sense would this legal tool be different to the Charter? Because actually, these countries do adhere to protecting human rights, and Poland does as well, but still there we can see this rollback on human rights, which actually led to the death of a 30-year-old woman last week. So it's very shocking.
And I think that these tools, they add. At the moment, the only legal tool that we have against Poland and their law is the rule of law, because the judges at the constitutional court were named by the government, which is contradictory with the Treaty of the European Union. When a country steps in the European Union, it has to have an independence of the justice compared to the government. So the constitutional courts cannot have judges that are named by the government. This is what happened in Poland. And it's something that could happen everywhere. So if you have a democratically elected government that starts to name its own judges, then you put together an illiberal democracy, and this government, with the help of this court, can really aggress human rights, as it has been done through abortion in Poland, but it can be done on the freedom of the media, it can also target LGBTI communities. So when you are an illiberal democracy, you do not stop at abortion. Abortion is maybe the first move, but in general, we fight for a European Union. The part of the dream come true that I was talking about was that it was to be a group of democracies, and the key, the cornerstone of a democracy is that you have the rule of law, and if you have the rule of law, justice is independent from the government. So this tool exists, but this tool has shortcomings because I've tried to make it simple, but maybe people who listen to it say, oh, what is this technocratic, juristic sort of blah, blah. So it's important that we have new tools that are more easy to understand. And so let's put it that way. When abortion is illegal, it is still done. Because if a woman doesn't want to carry a child, first of all, it's her choice, her body. Second of all, she has good reasons. Maybe they are economic. Maybe it's because her partner was violent. Maybe it's because, as was the case in Poland, there is a problem with the baby. So it's not because it's illegal that it will not be done. But if abortion is done in an illegal way, then women die. So it's a case of public health that every European woman and every woman in the world has access to a legal abortion. So in that sense, it's a fundamental right.
Yeah.
Human rights.
Yes, exactly. Okay, it was nice that you elaborated a bit on the fact that women, even if abortion is not allowed, women still seek abortion, and that this endangers them gravely because it's then illegal abortion done in an unsafe manner. And this is not even the solution to, this is no solution to anything. This is just putting women at even more risk. So just a question on what do women encounter when seeking abortion? Do they encounter barriers, and are there specific barriers that women encounter when they want to seek abortion, even if it is allowed?
So, of course, you have different cases all through the European Union. I think that a woman that seeks abortion when it's legal needs to have somebody to talk to, because maybe it's not an innocent decision. So this happens in different forms all through Europe. And it's not a barrier, but maybe in some cases the woman has just to justify different things. But then you also have a problem of disinformation that is growing, especially in these days and ages, where you have all the social network and complotist issues. So you now have a lot of teenage girls that can have received disinformation on abortion. And it's very important that we find the correct tool at the European level, because freedom of speech is very important. But if this freedom of speech is used by anti-abortion lobby to target teenage girls, to tell them false things about abortion, then it becomes a problem for the member of the European Parliament that I am. So we have a first member state that has created a law that is very interesting. It's in France. In 2017, there has been created the offense of digital obstruction to abortion. Because the case was, if you are a teenage girl, you are pregnant, you don't want to tell your parents, you do what today? You go to the internet. How can I abort? And it was a lobby, anti-abortion lobby, that had created a fake website where, in fact, they were telling you seek abortion, so please fill in a questionnaire. And this questionnaire was done in a way that the poor girl at the end, so, oh, I'm not going to seek abortion because I'm a bad girl, it's dangerous for my health. And so it's very important that we create an offense of obstruction to abortion. It was done in France, and I think that we should take it also at the European level. Of course, this development of the way of social network in the decision making at home has also other characteristics. For instance, in Italy, the poor doctors that do abortion, the anti-abortion lobby, they give their name, and so they are harassed on the public websites. And so you have 80% of Italian doctors that now do not want to do abortion, which has a second side effect, is that the 20% of doctors that do abortion, they end up doing only abortion, and they are not happy to be doctors that only do abortion. So it's important that we try to have tools on this problem of harassment on social network. So we have two texts that are coming and that are tackling that in the European Union. They are called DSA and DMA, Digital Single and Digital Service Act and Digital Market Act. All these will give tools, and I will make sure that the subject of abortion is tackled inside these texts.
Yeah, so building up on what you said, it is important to actually get rid of the stigma of accessing abortion, because this is what doctors also hinders from actually allowing abortion for women and also giving their service, because they actually don't want to adhere to the stigma, they are harassed and all of these things. So we have to fight against the stigma. Well, in this sense, I would like to ask you, you've been commonly, or the FEM committee in general has been commonly criticized for promoting abortion, and in your opinion, should abortion be completely deregulated? Should there remain some regulation? And has the Women's Rights Committee a joint opinion on this?
So first of all, we do not promote abortion. The fact that a law allows abortion does not prevent the women who do not want to abort to not abort. But the difference is, if it's illegal, then the woman who wants to abort is at risk with her life. It just happened in Poland, and also it's her body, it's her choice once and for all. I do not think that the issue is about deregulation. I really think that abortion is a health problem and should be tackled inside all the health texts that we are working on. There is no crime in abortion. It's a legal it's a legal thing, and it's a health thing. I think also that abortion can be should be part of a wider policy. That is about information, education, and also gender understanding. I think that we should, at the European Union, really concentrate on explaining that sexual education at school is not promoting perversity, but it's also being realistic about the fact that our teenagers or pre-teenagers today have access to free porn content, and that the fact that they see these pictures can make them have a sexuality before they would have had it maybe if they had and so we live in 2021 and we need to adapt, and I think that the best adaptation is not deregulation, it's information, communication, and in a way, it's not a crime, there is no shame. I mean, when you drive a car, sometimes you I'm not a good driver, and sometimes I will have a little accident alone with my car, or once I had a little accident with another car. It's not, there is no shame in that. There is no shame in growing up and developing an understanding. I mean, you have sex, you are young, you are pregnant, what is the problem? And you are older, you have sex, and you get pregnant, and you do not want to keep the child for whatever reason. It's your choice, it's your body. So there is no shame to be. It's not because it's linked with sex that we should have a different perception than the fact that we with the age, we become maybe more streetwise. And so it's very important for me that we take the shame part out. It's a legal thing. It's a right. Yes, it's a right, because if it's a fundamental right, because a woman that does not have access to legal abortion does not have the same freedom for her life than another European woman. Yeah. And worse than that, if you are in a country like Poland where abortion is illegal, then you have a new inequality, is the women who have money, a lot of money, they can fly to another member state and get aborted there. So that means that not only if you have abortion illegal in a country, not only the women do not have the same right as in another country, but inside the same country you have an inequality linked with the money compared to the life that they can have. It's not possible, and in that sense abortion is a fundamental right.
Yeah, very interesting how you elaborated on abortion also leading to other inequalities within countries such as in Poland. And that's exactly why the European Union has to step up and see like this opportunity window of also health policy improving, the European Health Union being created, and the EU also some kind of entity which educates and which promotes education in member states themselves on abortion and the right to abortion. I just wanted to get back to Poland and the 1 year anniversary of the Constitutional Court ruling against against the abortion right. I was wanting to ask you, why is it taking the EU such a long time to act against the rollback of abortion rights in Europe? And what are the reasons for this?
Okay, one of the shortcomings of the European dream come true is that we promote the rule of law, and it also applies to us. So if abortion is not a European competence, what we can do is try to attack the rule of law, which we have done, put conditionality on some budget with which we have in the end managed to do, and do resolutions which are really strong messages, but they are messages, they are not a law. And so tomorrow we will vote the resolution on the first year anniversary. The message that we send tomorrow is a message that goes from the extreme left of the European Parliament to the right of the European Parliament. So there is only the extreme, the far, far right that will not vote and that will support what is happening in Poland. So the political support on these issues is massive. You must understand that it's very important, because what happens in Poland could happen in every country. And I think that Amnesty International has a really should be really vocal on that, in the sense that illiberal democracies, they enter the bad practices for democracy through the small door. They get elected, and then they change one judge and two judges and three judges, and they get rid of the ombudsman. They, little by little, they create the conditions for a dictatorship to thrive. Mm-hmm. But then after, they need to have the population support. And the best way to have the population support is also with the money and structural help of anti-abortion lobbies to divide the population. And they send to the population very simple messages. No, abortion is not a universal right. There is no international law on abortion. And little by little, they want to divide, they spill little information. Each information taken individually is not false, but all the information provided at the same time create a haze of false information. And in Poland, the people, they talk about that. They don't talk about rule of law. They don't realize that they are not in a democracy anymore. And they will support their government, who defends them against Occidental permissivity. Or the, it's unbelievable. I had a talk with people who were saying, "You promote abortion. You promote homosexuality. You promote pedophilia." No, we do not do that at all. So we promote rule of law, and we promote that European women, be them Polish or not Polish, should have the same right to lead the same life inside the European Union.
Yeah. Okay, so following on this, I would like to ask you, is the EU part of any other broader international initiatives aiming at protecting women's rights to abortion?
Yeah. Yes, maybe not directly targeting abortion, but targeting violence against women. We have the Istanbul Convention, and inside the Istanbul Convention, you have things about gender education, yeah, roughly. But the Istanbul Convention is not ratified by a lot of countries. So we are part of something that is supposed to work, but it in the end, it depends on the member state doing its job or not. And we have worse than that. We have countries that want to get out of the Istanbul Convention, the first one being Turkey. We are in a global crisis following the pandemic. And Simone de Beauvoir said it very well in 1949. The first big economic crisis, women's rights are going to be cut everywhere. And she was quite visionary on that, because that's exactly what we see. So this is why I'm working on something, and my political group is working on something. First of all, we need to have the legal format that helps us really target these gender issues. And so we need a council for equality, a dedicated formation inside the Council of Europe targeting equality issues. Why do I say that? Because, in fact, abortion is part of another package at the moment. And inside this package, maybe you will have employment issues, social issues. And when the Minister of Employment, they meet, they do not discuss abortion, because it's really not their job. So we really have to have the ministers that are dedicated to equality issues to have the place where they can meet and discuss. Because one of the failures of the Istanbul Convention is that some member states do not ratify because they do not know how to transpose into their law. And if they can discuss with the minister from the other country that can explain, okay, you should stop fearing abortion because in my country we have this, 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 and we did not see an increase of anything, but on the contrary, we saw that in terms of public policies, it's better for the life of everybody. And so it's important that they can discuss. So because we had in Poland, they thought that sexual education at school was the promotion of pedophilia. Huh? And so that was one of the first texts I worked on. It was in August 2019. And they wanted to have the teachers in the schools that explain sexual education. They could have gone to jail for 3 years in Poland. So in this, if sexual education is not done at the correct moment in school, you will have unwanted pregnancies, but you will also have gender-based violence that will develop. So it's important that at the correct time, part of our education is understanding the world we live in and all our differences.
Yes, so there's a huge issue with education in the member states itself, even on people who are not against abortion, but who actually don't know how to implement legislation that makes abortion more freely accessible to women. I just was wanting to ask you a question on, well, yes, the Istanbul Convention exists, and as you well elaborated on, there are still countries who do not adhere to it, and who do not want to adhere to it, even if they know how to implement these rules, because they're very against these rules. We can see the Polish initiative earlier this year saying yes to family but no to gender,
yeah,
regarding the Istanbul Convention. What are the arguments that you are typically confronted with that are aiming at limiting abortion?
The guys that are against abortion are organized. So, in fact, they sent us a mail this morning. So, we know very well the things that they will say. And the things that they will say is that we want to promote abortion and that the babies have a right to life. So, sorry, but the answer to that is they are not yet babies, and this is why abortion is legal. Huh? So, they also say that a lot of women that have aborted regret having abortion. And the answer to that is, of course, abortion is not the decision that is easy to take. But in the same way that you have a car accident and the doctor tell you, if you, I have to cut your leg, if I cut your leg today, I cut half of it, and if we wait 2 weeks, maybe you keep your leg, but maybe I will have to keep the total of your leg, then you will face with a medical decision that you will maybe regret of your life, all your life. But what you regret is not having abortion. What you regret is having had an unwanted pregnancy. And so it's very important that we deconstruct that's what I've tried to do, the very elaborated and very heavily funded anti-abortion campaigns that we have inside the European Union. Luckily, we have in the FAM committee a progressive majority. That means that from the left, the Socialists, the Greens, with Renew, we have a sufficient majority to win on all these cases, which helps the right to be divided. If we did not have this progressive pro-abortion majority, then inside the right, maybe they would have stricter positions. I would like to come back on the subject of funding, because there was a study done by the European IPPF, something like that, and roughly we are talking about 700 million euros. That means that for the politicians from these countries, this sort of money is important for their campaigns. I mean, if you look back at Poland, Poland is the country of Solidarność. In the 80s, there were no subjects in Poland on abortion and women's rights. So how come that 40 years later, when you talk and you hear some of the Polish minister talk, you wonder if you are in the medieval ages or what? It's because of all this lobbying and this heavy money coming, then they have a political interest to do it. And also, as it's a neoliberal democracy, it's very efficient to target women's rights and LGBTQ rights to divide the population, and then you keep at the power. So I think it's very important to realize that the attack against abortion inside the European Union is funded and led by people that have anti-democratic ideas.
Mm, yeah, but you very well also showed our audience that there is hope, and there is hope. There are initiatives coming up. There is a majority in the parliament that you can have against anti-abortion parties, and that you are able, you can be maybe able to divide these parties and to break up their false arguments to actually limit abortion. To round this whole thing up, I would like to ask you one final question, and this is especially targeted to those that are living in countries where abortion is highly limited. What is one piece of advice that you would like to give a woman seeking abortion right now, for example, in Poland?
I think in Poland, what is really important is not to stay alone, because the stress at the moment that is put on this subject and on women in Poland is very difficult to bear. So it's important to get in contact with the associations and to support them. I think what also is very important is not to be ashamed and to remember we have got the power. Individually, as voters, we have got the power. So don't be ashamed. Move yourself. Go to vote. Become members of the National Assembly in Poland. Try to get elected. Vote. And be vocal on what you want, because that's what democracy is about. The Polish government should do what the Polish women want them to do.
This is a nice closing remark from you. So I would like to thank you for being at my interviewee today, and also for giving this opportunity to Amnesty International to see and shed a light on the European perspective and the European Union's perspective on abortion rights. To do a short summary, we've very much seen that we need to have abortion included into a wider policy. This must include education, especially education at member state level, which starts from a young age onwards, to actually get rid of the stigma which surrounds abortion and which also limits doctors from actually supplying abortion, even in countries where it is allowed. Another thing you mentioned, which was very interesting, are the digital influences on young women that impose great barriers and that also supply them with false information on abortion. And finally, I really liked your point about how Amnesty International needs to be more vocal on, yes, what is happening in Poland, but we also need to see that this can be done in other countries, and that other countries are at risk of following Poland in this approach. So yes, thank you very much. And I would like to tell our listeners that please stay tuned for our following episodes, which are coming. This one would be about with a Polish NGO, shedding more light on what is happening in Poland currently, and maybe also introducing some specific examples of Polish women seeking abortion and their barriers to abortion. And another episode will tackle what it is like for a woman living in a country where abortion is allowed to access abortion, but because, as we have seen from this podcast today, there are still important barriers remaining to these women. And yes, thank you very much for listening, and we are very much looking forward to having you as our guest for our next episode.